रंगना यमुना तीरावनचारी यमुना तीरावनचारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी जय गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी यशोदानंदन ब्रज जन रंजन यशोदानंदन ब्रज जन रंजन यमुना तीरावनचारी यमुना तीरावनचारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी
जय ओम विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राजकाचार्य अष्टोत्तर श्री श्रीमती श्वाइन ग्रेस एसी भक्तिवेदांत स्वामी श्रील प्रभुपाद की अनंत कोटि वैष्णववृंद की निताय गौर प्रेमानंदे ओम ज्ञान तिमिरंदस्य ज्ञानांजन शलाकया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्री गुरवे नमः श्री चैतन्य मनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूप कदा मह्यं ददाति स्वपदांतिकं वंदेहं श्रीगुरो श्रीयुतापदकमलं श्रीगुरून् वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं साग्रजातां सहगणा रघुनाथान्वितं तां सजीवं साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजना सहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्री राधा कृष्णपादान् सहगणा ललिता श्री विशाखान्वितांश्च हे कृष्ण करुणा सिंधो दीनबंधो जगत्पते गोपेश गोपिका कांता राधा कांता नमोस्तुते तप्त कांचन गौरांगी राधे वृंदावनेश्वरी वृषभानुसुते देवी प्रणमामि हरिप्रिये वांछाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपा सिंधुभ्य एव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद द्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौरभक्तवृंद हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 रामा 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 हरे 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 कृष्ण। So we welcome all of you for this weekly Sunday feast program at Sri Sri Radha Gopinath Mandir. As you all know, this month is the month of Gita Jayanti, and the actual day of Gita Jayanti is coming up in this week. It's on April 19th, coming Wednesday, Moksha Ekadashi. So I was asked to speak something on Bhagavad Gita, because the whole month is dedicated to the study and the discussion and the distribution of the knowledge of the Gita. So in whatever time we have, we will try to understand the deep message that Krishna has given us through the medium of the Gita, and try to apply it in our lives as much as possible. So, there is this prayer known as the Gita Dhyanam, where the Gita is glorified and meditated upon. It was written by one great saint who compares Bhagavad Gita to a mother. So the opening verse, the prayer says, Om Parthaya Pratibodhitam Bhagavatam Narayanina Swayam Vyasena Grathitam Purana Munina Madhye Mahabharatam. So it says, this great literature, Bhagavad Gita, was written by Vyasadev, the sage Vyasadev, and inserted it in the middle of the great epic known as Mahabharat. And he says, Advaitamrita Varshinim Bhagavatim Ashtadashadhyayinim. This literature consists of 18 chapters, and Advaita Amrita Varshinim, it showers Amrita Varsha, a shower of nectar. Ambatvam anusantatami Bhagavad Gite Bhavadveshini. And so here Amba, Gita is addressed as Amba, or O Mother. And he is praying for the blessings of this mother, Bhagavad Gita. In the same prayer, this poet compares how Krishna saved the Pandavas in the battle of Kurukshetra. So there he says, he compares the whole Mahabharata battlefield of Kurukshetra to a great river. And the two banks of the river are these two powerful Kaurava warriors, Bhishma and Drona. Bhishma Drona Tata. So these two warriors from the two banks. And the water in the river, which has a great current, like we have seen Ganga, it's a huge current. So this river has got a great current. And this current is represented by who? Jayadrath. And within the river, there are icebergs. If you know icebergs, they just form a small portion above the water, and majority of the portion of the iceberg is below the surface. And if the ship that is moving along is not careful about it, then they can get sunk. So, Shakuni is compared to that iceberg that is moving around in the waters of this river of Kurukshetra. The current of the river, which can suck away everyone, is who? Is Kripacharya. So, Bhishma Drona Tata Jayadrathajala. Jayadrath is the jal, water. Gandhara Nilotpala is the iceberg, Shakuni, Gandhara. And then Kripacharya is the water. Then there are crocodiles within the river. Who are those?
Shalya Grahavati Krupena Vahani Karnena Velakula. So Shalya, who was one of the commander-in-chiefs of the Kaurava army towards the end. Then Ashwatthama and Vikarna, they are compared to that crocodiles who can eat away any swimmer. Then there is the main whirlpool. Jo, kya bolte whirlpool ko? That is also there within the river. If anyway, not an expert swimmer goes in, then he gets sucked in by that whirlpool. Who is that whirlpool? Duryodhana is compared to that whirlpool. And into this river entered who? The Pandavas, Arjun. So just imagine if one person, unknown swimmer, has to meet all these challenges within a river. What are the chances that he can come out alive? It's impossible, right? Even if you are an expert swimmer, but if there are crocodiles inside, and there is a whirlpool inside, and so many other deadly animals are there inside, there is no way you can escape. But still, so tirna khalu pandavai rana nadi kaivartaka keshava. This poet is singing. Within this battle, there was this boat. Any boat would have got capsized. But because Lord Krishna was the boatman, he was able to save the Pandavas in spite of the dangers within this river. Kaivartaka Keshava. So that's how, if you read the Mahabharata, we understand Arjuna and the Pandavas had to go through so many dangers, so many attacks. Alone, they couldn't have won the war. But because of Krishna's presence, although Krishna was not a warrior, not going to lift any weapon in the war, he had promised that he won't fight the war, but he will simply accompany Arjuna as a charioteer. Still, because of Krishna's presence, and despite having a smaller army compared to the Kaurava Sena, Arjuna and the Pandavas were able to easily cross the ocean of the battlefield of Kurukshetra. So that's the Gita. And in this battle, in this river, Krishna spoke the main message, transcendental knowledge of the Gita. And that's one way how he saved Arjun and the Pandavas. So in this, today we'll try to discuss something from this immortal nectar. The theme for today's topic is happiness. So Krishna discusses the topic of happiness and the misery, topic of misery, in several places. So I have selected few random verses from different chapters. It's not in a continuous theme, but how Krishna brings out this point in several sections, and we will try to understand this tendency in all of us to search out happiness, how we are always running after happiness, but we are unable to experience the topmost happiness, and how, what is the nature of this happiness found in the material world. We will try to discuss this. So, in the 18th chapter, Krishna talks about, he defines happiness, different levels of happiness. So he says happiness, there are three types of happiness. Happiness in the mood of goodness, sattvic happiness, happiness in the mood of passion, rajasic happiness, and happiness in the mood of ignorance, tamasic happiness. So does it really matter, different types of happiness? Happiness, we feel, I like this, I enjoy this. The other person likes this, he enjoys this. Happiness is a feeling. How can it be classified into various forms? So that's the beauty of the Gita. It classifies everything in three sections. Whether it is happiness, whether it is intelligence, whether it is charity, whether it is determination, knowledge, worker. All these things are classified in three types. And if we study this, we understand not everyone is on the same level. So just like in the scientific world, they classify everything. Like in chemistry, you have elements classified into so many tables, right? In biology, they have classification. In engineering, they have classification. So when there is classification, we understand that it is systematic. It's not just a random choice. So human behavior can also be classified in three forms. In the mode of goodness, passion and ignorance. So here Krishna classifies how people enjoy and what kind of enjoyment people derive from various things can be classified in three forms. So what is happiness in the mode of goodness? Sattvik, sukh, kya hai? So he says, yatta dagre vishamiva pariname amrutopamam tat sukham sattvikam proktam atma buddhi prasadajam. So yad agre, agre means in the beginning, yad agre vishamiva, vishamiva means like poison, vish, agre vishamiva pariname amrut, pariname amrutopamam, that which is poison in the beginning but nectar in the end, amrut in the end, tat sukham sattvikam proktam, that happiness is in the mode of goodness. Atma buddhi prasadajam, that which awakens one to self-realization is the happiness in the mode of goodness. So today is the age of instant everything. Instant coffee, instant money, instant pleasure, instant booking, right? Instant purchases, instant shopping. We want everything instantly. And if the things don't work instantly, we feel it is inefficient, it is useless. If you want to book a railway ticket and if you have to wait for 5 minutes online, then it is considered waste. You may lose a ticket. If you go to ticket counter and wait for 1 hour in a line, that's not efficient. If you have to order something online and then if you don't get it on time, it is inefficient. And similarly, if you expect happiness instantly, and if happiness doesn't come instantly, we feel this is third class or inferior. Right? But here Krishna says, what appears to be poison in the beginning, agre vishamiva, and amrut will come later, say 1 month later. You invest something now and you will get it, the returns later, 1 month later, 1 year later. So that kind of happiness is actually in the mode of goodness. Any example? Example is, say for example, you want good health. So if your health is bad now, can you get instantly good health? We have to take the right medicine, we have to do the right exercise, follow the right diet. Then after long time, say few months or maybe years, then the results start showing up. So even when you fall sick, the doctor says you have to avoid this, you have to follow this, eat this. To recover from bad health, it takes several days. Similarly, so that's a kind of happiness in the mode of goodness. You initially you have to follow diet, you have to take medicines, which is like wish, which is like poison. We don't want to do all those things. Costly medicines and tasteless medicines, and follow exercise, follow a certain routine. You cannot eat this, you have to follow this, eat this. That no one likes to do. So it is like wish, poison. But then when the results start showing up and when we start enjoying good health, then that is real nectar, real happy life. On the other hand, what is happiness in the mode of passion? Krishna says, Vishayendriya samyogat యత్తదగ్రే అమృతోపమం. విషయ, విషయ ఇస్ లైక్ సెన్స్ ఆబ్జెక్ట్స్, ఆబ్జెక్ట్స్ ఆఫ్ హ్యాపీనెస్. దెర్ ఆర్ సెవెరల్ ఆబ్జెక్ట్స్ విచ్ వీ వాంట్ టు ఎంజాయ్, దోస్ ఆర్ కాల్డ్ విషయ. అండ్ దెర్ ఇస్ ఇంద్రియ. ఇంద్రియ మీన్స్ అవర్ బాడీ, అవర్ సెన్సెస్. సో విషయ ఇంద్రియ సంయోగాత్ ద హ్యాపీనెస్ దట్ ఈస్ డిరైవ్డ్ ఫ్రమ్ ద కాంటాక్ట్ ఆఫ్ విషయ అండ్ ఇంద్రియ. విషయేంద్రియ సంయోగాత్ యత్తదగ్రే అమృతోపమం. అగ్రే అమృతోపమం, ఇన్ ద బిగినింగ్ ఇట్ ఈస్ లైక్ నెక్టర్, పరిణామే విషమివ. ద కాన్సిక్వెన్సెస్ విషమివ. తత్ సుఖం రాజసం స్మృతం. దాట్ హ్యాపీనెస్ ఇస్ రాజసిక్. సో ఇన్స్టెంట్ హ్యాపీనెస్ Krishna says is rajasic. You see an object, you possess it, acquire it, enjoy it, and you enjoy, you feel happy. So that is happiness. Certainly there is some happiness in it, but eventually, very soon, we are going to suffer something, suffer misery due to it. That happiness which is derived from contact of the senses with their objects and which appears like nectar at first, but poison at the end, is said to be of the nature of passion. So most of the enjoyments, most of the advertisements that we see it in today's times, is promising this kind of happiness. And anything that promises future happiness, people don't trust it. And there is one more happiness, Krishna says. Happiness in the mode of ignorance. What is it? Yadagre chanubandhecha sukham mohanam atmanah nidralasya pramadottam tat tamasam udahritam. And that happiness which is blind to self-realization, which is delusion from beginning to end, and which arises from, beginning to end. So in goodness and passion, there was happiness at least in the beginning or in the end. But here right from the beginning till the end, it's all illusion. There is no real happiness of people who are in the mode of ignorance, tamasic. And whatever so-called happiness they claim to enjoy is arising from what? Nidra. Sleep. Alasya. Laziness. And pramada. Pramada is madness. Whimsical behavior, mad behavior. So people who derive happiness in sleep and laziness and illusion, such people are in the mode of ignorance. So Sleep is considered as a prime source of happiness in today's times. The more late you can wake up, the longer you can sleep, the greater the amount of, the more long, more the number of hours you can sleep. That is considered a great privilege. Especially in college hostels we see this. People don't go to sleep before 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the night. And the college is at 9 o'clock, they will get up at 8:45. And do some so-called bathing, washing, and rush. And attend the classes, how attentive they can be. Unclean state, uncleanliness is another sign of mode of ignorance. And they come back, and then they go to sleep in the evening. After the college hours, around 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock, when I was in the hostel, my friends used to go to sleep 5 o'clock and then get up at 8 o'clock and then go for dinner. And then remain awake till 2, 3. In one place Krishna says, Yanisha sarva bhutanam tasyam jagarti samyam. For the awakening hours of a regular ordinary person is the time of sleep for the self-realized sage. And the waking up hours for the self-realized sage is the sleeping hours for the ordinary person. Anyway, so Krishna says, these are three kinds of happiness. Even violence, people deriving happiness out of violent activities, giving pain to others, is also considered happiness in the mode of ignorance, tamasic. So having defined this, Krishna explains several other instances in the earlier chapters, how we should stay away from these inferior forms of happiness and try to seek out the higher forms of happiness. So temptations, the world is, the material world is always filled with temptations. Especially in this age of Kali Yuga, advertisements, billboards, these are all offering us temptations. Enjoy this, take this, purchase this. So in one article, Chaitanya Charitamrita compares these temptations to the dust accumulated in the car's engine. So if we have a car and we want to drive it smoothly, it has to be having clean air, clean fuel, clean petrol. But if dust is accumulated there in the carburetor, then the efficiency of the vehicle will reduce and it cannot run smoothly. Even if it runs, the engine will get damaged very soon and it won't be able to, the engine may get damaged and the fuel efficiency will reduce. Right? So similarly, all these temptations that are present in the environment, our system absorbs them unknowingly, knowingly. And those are like dust particles in the engine. And if we don't clean them regularly, and if we allow them to remain, then our efficiency in our day-to-day activities will reduce. So they suck out our energy, suck away our focus, concentration, all these temptations. Therefore, we need to clean them regularly. Just like we take a bath every day, clean our bodies. Similarly, mind is like that absorbing agent, a sponge that absorbs all these temptations from the environment. Now, we may not realize how these things are getting settled in our mind. But just by remaining in contact with them, they get settled. So just like we have this sofa, it's cleaned regularly. Now, after 1 week, there will be so much dust accumulated. We need to clean it again. No one is going and putting the dust here. But just from the environment, the dust gets settled here. Similarly, dust is there everywhere. Temptations are there everywhere. They automatically settle down in our mind, in our consciousness. And if we are not taking regular methods, not following regular cleaning methods to clean the consciousness, to clean our mind, then eventually they will start influencing and affecting our daily activities. So therefore we need to have a daily process, daily practice of cleaning the mind, to clean away all the influence of all these temptations, so that our efficiency remains fixed. Therefore Lord Chaitanya says, Cheto Darpana Marjanam. He compares the mind to a mirror. Mirror on which dust gets accumulated. So Cheto Darpana Marjanam. Cleaning has to be done. So what is that cleaning agent? Lord Chaitanya calls it Sri Krishna Sankirtanam. Chanting Krishna's holy names regularly. That is the most effective method of cleaning the mind. And even other forms of devotional service, remembrance of Krishna and other nine kinds of devotional activities, everything is like a cleaning agent. Primarily, remembrance of Krishna through chanting or any other form is the main thing that wipes the mirror of the heart clean. And if you are not doing it regularly, then these things will settle down. Ideally, we should do every day, early in the morning. We rise early and chant our rounds. Then, throughout the day, the mind will remain clean. And even if there are temptations throughout the environment, it will be ready to absorb them and handle it properly. Otherwise, if their mind is not clean, lots of accumulated dust is there on the mind, and if new temptations come, the general tendency is to become a victim of the temptation. So one who is regularly cleaning, he is able to tolerate these temptations, say no to the temptations. In one place Krishna says, in the second chapter he says, yada samharate chayam kurmongani vasarvashah indriyani indriyarthebhyas tasya pratnya pratishtita. He says, one who is serious about controlling the senses or advancing on the path of spiritual life, he should be like a tortoise. What is the nature of a tortoise? So the tortoise is moving around on the ground, and whenever it sees a danger, then immediately it withdraws its limbs inside the shell. And anyone who sees that shell, withdrawn tortoise, he will think it is like a stone, a piece of stone lying. We can't identify it as a living animal. It is said the shell of the tortoise is so strong, even if an elephant steps on it, it won't break. That's how strong it is. So, a yogi, Krishna says, as soon as he moves around and sees some temptations, allurements, distractions, and he identifies, this is danger, I have to be careful, immediately he withdraws his limbs. His limbs means the senses. And he covers himself with a protective shell and protects himself from all these allurements. One who is not trained, one who is not practiced to withdraw, he will think the temptations are enjoyment offers. And this is a free enjoyment is available, let me take it and enjoy it. Not realizing how the same temptations are going to award him future suffering, result in future suffering. And then later you regret, why did I do this, why did I not save myself? So in the second chapter Krishna says, in this connection, he says, Bhogaishwarya prasaktanam taya pahruta chetasam vyavasayatmika buddhi samadhau na vidhiyate. In the minds of those who are too attached to sense enjoyment and material opulence and who are bewildered by such things, the resolute determination for devotion service does not take place. So if you're constantly hunting for enjoyment, then Krishna says, vyavasayatmika buddhi, the determination to practice serious spiritual life, na vidhiyate, does not take place. Because they are too distracted by seeking enjoyment outside. And spiritual life is all about going within, going inside, searching out and discovering our inner potential. So one who is distracted by bhoga and aishwarya outside, grandeur and grand opulences and glamour outside, then is captivated by that kind of things and unable to realize his real potential inside. So we should remember again the initial definition of enjoyment. What is happiness in the beginning, nectar, poison in the end is in the mode of passion. So there are several characteristics of these kind of enjoyments. One characteristic is, it torments us. Even when we are enjoying a certain material object, we are constantly in anxiety. Arey khatam ho jayega, it will get over soon. If you are eating something, if you are watching something, we are in an anxiety that very soon it is going to get over. If you are enjoying money, it gets over, right? We have only limited stock of money, and I want to enjoy so many things, but resources are so less. So which one to enjoy? That itself is consuming our minds and giving us a lot of anxiety. Another nature of material enjoyment is, the more we enjoy material objects, the lesser the taste for spiritual devotional activities. The more you enjoy inferior happiness, the lesser we are able to appreciate superior happiness. That's the nature of material enjoyment. Therefore, Krishna says in one place, in order to enjoy superior happiness, one has to give up lower forms of enjoyment. Only when we have sufficiently given up lower forms of enjoyment and simultaneously practicing and accepting higher forms of enjoyment, then we are able to permanently give up inferior enjoyment. So initially there is a struggle. Say if you want to enjoy some eatable which is not very good for health, and you are told, the doctor says, don't take this, you have to avoid this and take this. So we don't have a taste for higher enjoyment. We want to enjoy, we are addicted to a lower enjoyment. But initially we have to struggle, say no, because it's a superior instruction, it's good for me. Intelligently we have to decide, no, no. So after a certain time, when we recover our health, when we recover our taste buds, then we understand, oh, this is an inferior, lower form of enjoyment. How could I enjoy this? And we start relishing the taste of superior objects. Similarly, Krishna says, to give up material enjoyment, objects of this world, and appreciate real devotional things, spiritual things, initially there is a struggle. Initially we follow the four regulative principles. No meat eating, no illicit sex, no intoxication, no gambling. Say no. The tendency is to enjoy all these. But with practice, with time, we are able to appreciate and relish that superior happiness. Happiness in chanting the holy names, chanting, worshipping the deity, taking darshan of the deities, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. All this taste, which is actually natural to us, doesn't immediately come up. It takes time. Therefore, there is a struggle in the beginning to give up, say no to the inferior enjoyments. So, enjoyment, material enjoyment is like, Chaitanya Charitamrita compares it to a game which we cannot win and cannot quit. You entered the game, there's no way you can win the game, and there is no way you can come out of the game. You are forced to play continuously and continuously lose. That's how it is. So it's like, say someone is playing tennis, and 21 points, the winning badminton. Huh? So you are winning, you are playing the game of badminton, so you have one law, two law, and you 20-0. You're 20-0, you are winning. And the other side, opponent is Maya. Okay. So 20-0 you are winning, and there is no, you will think, are abhi tum jitna hi hai. One point I have to win. Suddenly you will find it is 21-20. Last moment, Maya will turn the tables upside down. And then you will wonder, are kya ho gaya achanak? So that's how material enjoyment is. Initially you feel, arey, everything is so nice, everything is so good. Why the Gita is saying, don't enjoy, don't enjoy? What's harm? What's wrong? And suddenly in one instant, you will find everything has changed. What appeared to be good suddenly becomes a threat for my life. Suddenly becomes so dangerous. And then we start regretting. Why did I play the game? But you can't quit also. So you lose one set, then you realize, then you think, maybe next set I will be careful. Next game I am going to be really careful. And again you start playing the game. And again the same thing continues. 10-0, 15-0, 20-0. And then you say, now I will be careful. But again, she will somehow change the whole thing and then you are lost. So therefore Krishna says, Daivi Hyesha Gunamai Mama Maya Duratyaya. It is impossible to overcome my material energy. Duratyaya means you cannot defeat her. Unless Mamevaye Prapadyante Maya Metam Tarantita. Only when you take shelter of Krishna, Krishna says, Maya Metam Tarant. You are able to swim over, cross over the ocean of material enjoyment. So insatiable. Material enjoyment is insatiable. Insatiable means no matter how much you get, no matter how much you enjoy, we never feel we have enjoyed enough. I want more. This is not enough. It was good, but I need more. So the mind will never become satisfied and say, enough. Now I am happy and satisfied. Nothing more required. That state, the mind never reaches. That's how material enjoyment functions. That's how the mind functions. It's like an endless supply of fuel which can never be satisfied. Always burning. And we feel, I will pour fuel now and it will be happy, satisfied. But the more you add fuel, the more it will start blazing more. So continuous supply of enjoyment, still it will continuously keep burning. Insatiable. Next is, it is irresistible. You know it is burning my life, it is burning away all my energy. Still, we are unable to withdraw ourselves and come out of it. So what do we do then? I have entered the game and I cannot quit the game. What is the option? Third option? Change the game. Look out for a new game. Because the tendency to play the game is there. We all want to play the game. But this game is dangerous. Therefore Krishna says, look out for a higher form of happiness. Because what we are actually looking for is enjoyment in the game. We enjoy playing, we enjoy winning. Right? The tendency to play and compete and win is there in all of us. But the problem is we are playing with the wrong opponent, in the wrong game. Krishna says, you seek out that game which is permanent. That enjoyment which is permanent. This enjoyment will suck away all your energy and can never satisfy us. Vishaya vinivartante nirahārasya dehina rasavarjam rasopyasya param drishtva nivartate. Experience a higher taste. We have the Govinda's restaurant, there's the higher taste, right? Similarly, enjoyment, the tendency to look out for enjoyment is there in all of us. But what kind of enjoyment we are seeking? That's important. If you look for enjoyment in matter, in this material world, that enjoyment is going to frustrate us. But the enjoyment in things that are permanent, things that are eternal, things that are real. Real means anything connected to spirit, anything connected to God, Krishna. Those things give us real enjoyment, lasting enjoyment. And that's the nature of our existence. We are meant to enjoy permanent things. Our nature is Sat Chid Ananda Vigraha. Sat. We are supposed to remain permanent. We are full of knowledge. And we are meant to enjoy permanent happiness. But the nature of this world is, it is Asat. It is Achit. It is ignorance. And Nirananda, it is devoid of real happiness. Anything that is temporary can never give us permanent enjoyment. Then our nature is to remain permanent. We are looking for something permanent. But the nature of this world is to remain temporary. Everything is constantly changing. We are trying to look for permanent happiness in a world that is constantly changing. Therefore we get frustrated. Therefore Krishna advises, look for things that never change, even if the world changes throughout all the time. So anything that is connected to Krishna, anything that is connected to spirit, is the thing that will never change. And if we are able to derive happiness in these things, then we are secure and sheltered. Otherwise, it's like building a building on a changing foundation. The foundation is always moving, and the building cannot stand. But the foundation is strong. Then, no matter how many cyclones and wind is blowing, the building will stand strong. Similarly, our shelter, our source of enjoyment should be permanent, fixed, eternal things. Then, no matter how the world changes all over around us, we won't be shaken. Another characteristic of material enjoyment is it is futile. For most people who look out for happiness in this material world, fail to achieve it. People want happiness in wealth, people want happiness in other objects of enjoyment. Most people are unable to derive it and get it, either due to lack of money, lack of time, lack of energy, lack of resources. Those who do get it, after a long struggle, once they get it, they feel, oh, it was not as good as I thought in the beginning. I expected this much happiness, but then when I got it, it turned out to be so insignificant. It happens with movies many times. There is so much hype about this movie, this actor, this actress, this effect, special effects. And then we go and watch the movie. And most of the time, the reaction after watching the movie is, itna bhi kuch khas nahi tha. Theek hai, okay. Right? Because we have wasted the money, we don't tell everyone this. We tell others, haan, dek, dek, dek. And then they also come and tell the same thing. So, the expected happiness is not there. We expect this much, and it delivers this much. So even if there is happiness, it is not the promised amount. And even if we get the promised happiness, say you go for a movie and then you enjoy, or you get an object which promises this much amount of happiness, and then you get it, and you get that happiness. But how long does the happiness last? The nature of happiness is constantly going down. It is said the maximum happiness you get from an object is just before you get the object. That's in the mind. So say for example, you want to purchase a car, and you're excited about getting the car, enjoying the car, traveling around the car. So the maximum happiness derived from that car is the few minutes before you actually get the car. The moment you get the car or the vehicle, whatever it is, the curve starts falling down. First day, it will be like this. Second day, like this. Within a week, it will be like this, 50%. And then there is a scratch on the car. It's like zero. Then you want a new car. And then new model comes. It happens with phones, right? We all experience this. You get a new phone, immediately the next week there is another new model. And then you wonder, it's 64 GB, 128 GB. RAM capacity, camera capacity, pixel capacity is more. And we wonder why we got this. We could have waited at least 1 week, I could have got a new phone, new car, new vehicle. So, it is futile most of the times. There is no happiness at all in material enjoyment. Even if there is happiness, it is not the promised amount. And even if you get the promised amount of happiness, it doesn't last long. On the other hand, spiritual happiness is not futile. It is permanent. And it is more than the promised amount. Initially we feel what is there in it. But the more we experience it, then we realize it is actually nava yauvanamcha. It's always refreshing and ever increasing. And it is permanent. It is not something that is going to end after a certain amount of time. So that's how Krishna characterizes happiness in different places. In one place, it is said about wealth. There was this person who was a miser, and he collected a lot of money, never did any punya kam, pious activity. So finally he dies. And to his surprise, he goes to heaven. The people from heaven come and take him to heaven. So at the gate of the heaven, the gatekeepers say, You are here? We never expected you here. So he said, you don't know. Once upon a time, during a festival in a temple, in the temple procession, I donated 1 rupee to a beggar who was sitting on the temple road near the temple. That's why I'm here. So, achha. So they said, okay, now your enjoyment is over. That 1 rupee awarded you to come here to have a darshan of the heaven. Now you go. So he said, achha, then where is the 1 rupee? You give me the 1 rupee, then I'll go. So gladly Chitragupta, who was the accountant there, he offers the 1 rupee, and this miser takes the 1 rupee and happily proceeds to hell to suffer there. The point is how wealth, people are obsessed with collecting wealth, enjoying wealth. They are ready to undergo any amount of struggle in order to acquire wealth. Sometimes people are forced, sometimes people work extra hours in order to acquire some little extra money so that we can enjoy more. So Krishna says, go for the real wealth. The nature of material, ordinary wealth is, first of all, it is unattainable for most people. We crave for lots of wealth. We dream about becoming a millionaire, billionaire, crorepati, lakhpati, whatever. But how many people are able to become that, attain that stage? Out of 7 billion people, say India, in India we have 1.2 billion people. How many people are crorepatis? Few. Right? They release a list, billionaire list. How many are billionaires? Maybe less than 100? Out of 1.2 billion people, 100 people are billionaires. Billionaire means 1000 million. Right? So for most people it is unattainable. Impossible to become a billionaire. For those who become billionaire, somehow or other, by karma, by hard work, whatever, how many are able to remain a billionaire? How long will they remain a billionaire? This list keeps changing all the time. Right? And even if those who are able to somehow maintain their position as a top richest man, how many are able to enjoy the wealth? Because such wealth is considered chanchal. Chanchal means constantly changing, never fixed. So even if you get the desired amount of money, what is the guarantee that we will remain happy with the money? Most people who commit suicides are wealthy people who have everything in life from our point of view. So wealth doesn't guarantee happiness. That doesn't mean we should not acquire wealth. That's not the point. The point is, if we think wealth is a source of happiness in our life and auspiciousness in our life, that is a false conception. We need wealth, we must acquire wealth, whatever basic things we need, we definitely work for it. But to think that this wealth is going to be my source of happiness, that's a misconception. Therefore Krishna says, this is in the 6th chapter, 6.22, Yam labdhva chaparam labham manyate nadhikam tataha yasmin stito na dukkhena guru napi vichalyate. Go for that wealth upon gaining which one thinks there is no greater gain. Being situated in such a position, one is never shaken even in the midst of the greatest calamity. That's the wealth we are looking for. We should be looking for. Upon gaining which, we think there is nothing more to gain. So there again, he continues the same point. He says, and that which is that happiness? Happiness that is rooted in spirit, in spiritual activity, spiritual pleasure. So, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, you find Prahlad Maharaj saying, happiness is a byproduct, not the main product. If our main quest is happiness, then Prahlad says, you will never get happiness. If you are hunting for happiness, you will never get happiness. But if you are hunting for something else, then you will get happiness as a byproduct. What is that something else? So if you look for service, selfless service, devotional service to Krishna and selfless service to other living entities, then happiness will follow you as a byproduct. Otherwise, if we look for happiness, happiness will always remain at a distance. We feel, I've almost reached happiness, about to grab it, but we'll always maintain a distance. The moment we give up the search, the hunt for happiness, then happiness will automatically come, provided we are running after something superior. So Krishna says, Machitta madgata prana bodhayanta parasparam kathayantascha mam nityam tushyanticha ramanticha. He says, those devotees who are continuously engaged in Machitta madgata prana, always continuously thinking of me, discussing about my topics, bodhayanta parasparam, among devotees they come and discuss about me. Such devotees, kathayantascha mam nityam tushyanti cha ramanti cha, they derive real happiness. So when our focus is not happiness, if our focus is Krishna, service to Krishna, devotional service, then tushyanti cha ramanti cha automatically will happen. Without separately endeavoring for becoming happiness independently. So therefore, then we get the real thing. In the Bhagavatam, Prahlad Maharaj says, Sukham Aindriyakam Daitya Deha Yoge Nadehinam Sarvatra Labhyate Daivat. He says, just like no one struggles to attain misery, right? No one here goes and says, Arey, bahut sukh praapt kar le, thoda sa dukh bhi le leta hun jeevan mein. No one does that, right? But automatically, dukh comes in our life. Similarly, Prahlad says, without struggling and working hard to obtain happiness, just as one does not work hard to obtain misery, similarly, without working hard for happiness, you will get it, whatever is destined in your life. So if you are destined to win big amount of money, even if you don't separately work for it, that is going to come, Prahlad says. And even if you are destined to suffer something, you will get it, even if you try hard to avoid it. So just as we struggle hard to avoid misery, but it comes anyway. Similarly, certain amount of happiness which is destined in our life will come anyway, without separately struggling, running after it. So in another place Krishna says, the nature of rajasic happiness. Real happiness comes from not from the standard of living. So there are two things, standard of living and standard of longing. What are we longing for? What are we aspiring for? So here someone's happiness, a country's, a nation's happiness index is measured by people's standard of living. Right? How much education they have, how much access they have to electricity and basic housing facility and clothes and basic requirements. That's how you judge country's standard of living. Right? So Krishna, here this verse indicates our evaluation of happiness should not be based on the standard of living. It should be based on the standard of what we are longing, what we are hankering for. So someone may have nothing, someone may have only bare necessities of life, a poor man on the street. But such a person can be happy also. If he is not having great ambitions and hankering and desire to obtain this and that. On the other hand, someone who has everything, maybe residing in a big bungalow, but he is not happy with whatever things he has, and is constantly hankering for more and more and more. So he is not happy. So a beggar on the street, he has no big longings. A person on the, a billionaire is having great longings. So he is happy ultimately, at the end of the day. So one who is having unlimited desires, unfulfilled desires, such a person is the one who is actually miserable. And one who doesn't have unlimited desires or limited desires, he is relatively happier than another person. So Krishna defines, he says, Lobha pravrittirarambha karmanam ashamaspraha rajasyetani jayante vivruddhe varadarshava. He says, mode of passion is the breeding ground of unlimited desires. And unlimited desires means unlimited longings. And there is no end. You may have all facilities in life, but we may, if we continuously long for this and that and that, this object, that object, this enjoyment, we are miserable. And someone who is having relatively peaceful life and not so much ambition, he is peaceful. So in this way, Krishna, in the 16th chapter, he talks about divine and demonic nature. He says the demons are ones who have chintam aparimeyam cha. And it says, asha pasha shatair baddha. People who have unlimited desires are like prisoners in a jail who are bound by unlimited desires. So usually prisoners are bound by chains. Right? And they cannot escape the chain. These people, how are they bound? By desires. The desires restrict their freedom to move around peacefully, to remain peaceful. So he says, chintam aparimeyam cha pralayantam upashita kamopa bhoga parama etavadati nishchita asha pasha shatair baddha. Pash matlab ropes. Ash ke pash. Asha ke pash. The ropes of desires. Shatair, hundreds of such desires. Baddha, bound. Kama krodha parayana. Ihante kama bhogartham anyayenartha sinchayan. Such people who are bound by unlimited desires, they acquire wealth through illegal means in order to enjoy sense gratification. So therefore, we need to understand real happiness lies in selflessness. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishna's Kaviraj Goswami defines Atmendriya Preeti Vancha Tare Bali Kam Krishnendriya Preeti Icha Dhare Premanam. Atmendriya, one who is trying to fulfill his selfish desires, is called lust. That tendency is called lust. Whereas Krishnendriya Preeti Icha, one who is trying to serve Krishna, trying to please Krishna's senses, that mood or feeling is called Premanam, love. So these two things are constantly brought out, lust and love. What appears as love in this material world is usually lust. Love covered by something else. So that is lust, the tendency to enjoy our own senses. There is a tendency to serve Krishna and please Krishna's senses is a real love. So in this way, Krishna gave several definitions. We don't have much time because we are supposed to end early. We have the Gita Yajna today. In the last few minutes, I would like to share with you something about this book distribution. There's a book distribution month and we all are trying to participate in this marathon. So this is a book by Vaisheshika Prabhu, Our Family Business, where he talks about the importance of sharing this knowledge with others. He says, in the world there have been many revolutions. And all these revolutions are brought about by the power of the written word. He says, writing is a gift to humanity. Animals can scratch and bite, but humans can write. And humans are singularly equipped not only to write, but also to appreciate others' writing. So he says, history shows that a few well-chosen words, printed and distributed, can touch people's hearts, spark them to form movements, and even galvanize them to topple empires. In this regard, it is said, the pen is mightier than the sword. Right? So even big revolutionaries like Karl Marx and other Western people who brought about big revolutions, they did using their books and philosophy. Karl Marx wrote that book, Communist Manifesto, about communism. And that created such a revolution. And they overthrew the capitalist empire. So he talks about how when great people write, and when those words are distributed, then that can create a revolution in society. In the Bhagavatam we find this verse, Tadvag visargo janataga viplavo. The words written by Vyasadeva and other great acharyas have the capacity to create a revolution in the lives of a misdirected civilization. In the impious lives of a misdirected civilization. And that's what Prabhupada did. He took those words, he translated them, added his own realizations. And we see those same words are creating a revolution all over the world. Right? So when great ideas, great thoughts, great concepts are presented in written form and then shared with others, he compares it, Vaisheshika Prabhu compares it to like a fertile field where you throw seeds. And if the land is fertile, those seeds will eventually grow with the help of sunshine and water. So in this world, when we throw these seeds of ideas, seeds of concepts, seeds of spiritual thought, when we plant these seeds everywhere, those seeds will eventually grow and people's consciousness will change and eventually there will be a revolution in consciousness. So our job is just to throw these seeds everywhere as much as possible. Because the words, the seeds are powerful and the environment is powerful. Eventually it will grow. And we should expect a revolution very soon. So therefore Prabhupada said, distribute my books, distribute my books. Every time he would say, I'm working hard in the middle of the night writing these books. All we have to do is give out these books to people and people are ready. If they don't, they may not read immediately, but eventually, very soon, one day or the other, someone in the family, someone in the neighborhood will read the book and their lives will be transformed. So in this month we try our best to go out and give out these books, share this knowledge with as many people as possible and help people raise their consciousness cultivate their devotion to Krishna. And in this way we can do the greatest benefit to society by reviving their Krishna consciousness, by reviving their dormant love of Krishna. That's the best service we can do, and let us pray and try our best to share this knowledge with everyone. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much. So we'll have a short kirtan and then all of you can go for prasad. They need to wind up everything and arrange for the Gita Yajna downstairs.
Hare Krishna.
Jaya Sri